Hi, this is Lex, and welcome to the FinTech Blueprint. It's your podcast about fintech, decentralized finance, digital banking, investing, robo-advice, artificial intelligence, and all the other frontier technology that is transforming financial services. To get more content, like an illustrated transcript of this conversation in your inbox, subscribe at fintechblueprint.com. So without further delay, let's jump into today's episode. Hi, everybody, and welcome to today's podcast. I'm really excited for today's episode with Nick Lombardo, who is the co-founder and president at ARC Technologies, which is a firm that finances software as a service companies. And we're going to talk about the business. We're going to talk about the market, as well as Nick's journey into becoming an entrepreneur. So with that, Nick, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Lex. I'm excited to be here.
Let's start at the beginning. For many of us, the beginning is our entry into financial services. Where did you grow up? Like, what kind of skill set did you put together at the very beginning of your career?
My entry into finance started in undergrad. I was an economics major. I was very interested in understanding business, learning about it broadly. And I decided that going down the what you could call the traditional finance path, starting with investment banking, moving to private equity in New York, would give me that type of exposure. And so I did just that. The beginning, you know, chapter one, I'd call it, you know, traditional finance before moving to chapter two, which is fintech and ARC. You know, double clicking on chapter one, I spent 6 years, 2 in investment banking, 4 at a private equity firm called AEA. And it was an awesome experience. I spent my time drinking from the fire hose, learning about finance, business more broadly, really trying to jam in as much learning into those years as I could from really smart people. That's really both where I started learning about business. There was some, you know, technology exposure at AEA, the private equity firm. I focused on industrial technology, and in my final couple of years there, industrial software, as we defined it. And through those experiences, you know, capital raising for our portfolio companies, selling our businesses, operating them, I really started to feel some of the, you know, firsthand, you know, pain points, or started thinking through a lot of the issues that we're now trying to tackle at ARC.
Just to double click a little bit more on the private equity and investment banking experience, I'm sure you made a lot of spreadsheets of cash flow. And what kinds of companies were you modeling? Like, which industries did you cover? You said industrials. Was that the same for the investment banking work?
On the investment banking side, I was a generalist focused on M&A transactions. And so, yes, lots of spreadsheets, modeling, you know, buy side and sell side transactions across industries. Did a lot of industrials, consumer retail, healthcare, you know, tech deals. And then at AEA, we were largely focused on industrials, both from, you know, traditional kind of chemicals businesses, building products, et cetera, as well as increasingly what we called industrial technology, which included, you know, any kind of value chain that ended up, you know, downstream driving some kind of hardware or software, you know, technology play. And that included building out our, you know, software investing vertical. But I'd say the difference between who a fintech like ARC might cover and these businesses, or these were largely, you know, multi-billion dollar mature businesses.
How did you think about their revenue? What was their revenue profile? Like, how did you project what the future was going to be like?
Typically, the financial forecasts that we built were largely rooted in historicals. You know, with these businesses, we had, you know, multi-year history to go off of. And so there was some of the, you know, the way we built operating models was bottoms-up build, you know, by product, understanding the macro trends surrounding the business, but also digging in with management teams to understand new product introductions and really trying to see if there's an inflection point in the business. It was bottoms up, it was top down.
Gotcha. This is going to be an existential question that I think, for me at least, is really important. So you spent a good chunk of time looking at companies in the shape of this like money abstraction, right? In the shape of these are the financials they generate and this is how they grow and sort of like this is their quantitative form. And then businesses are transformed into that form within the financial services industry so that they can access kind of financial products and so on. And my question to you is like, what is the purpose of finance? And in part, from either an investment banking point of view or private equity point of view, like how do you think about the purpose of financing, you know, for a company, whether it's a large multinational like you were covering early on in your career or more generally, like how do you think about finance as a product? What is it for?
It's a great question. And there's different areas of, I think you're asking about, you know, financing, so capital raising, but I'd say like broadly the finance function is to manage, put simply, manage cash, manage how you deploy the cash to ideally grow your business and create shareholder value. There's ways that you can, you know, raise capital on the equity and debt side to inject it in your business for different types of initiatives. And that was what we were focused on more in a transactional way in investment banking. And then on the private equity side, it was we were more, you know, the capital allocators. And that included, you know, large strategic alternatives, but also around, you know, hiring decisions and just kind of where to allocate the money within the business.
What's the purpose of allocating the money or managing the cash flow from a company perspective?
It's what enables a business to grow. I know we're not talking about, you know, ARK in particular yet, but I think, you know, with mature companies that have broad access to, you know, the capital markets and have large finance teams and access to, you know, bankers and, you know, consultants and lawyers, you know, there's more levers you can pull to grow your business and create value. And then, you know, at the earliest stage when teams are smaller and, you know, more vulnerable and there are less options, I think that's what really excites me about, you know, the kind of why behind finance and financial services. And that's where ARK starts to make more sense.
So let's switch to ARK. Let's start with what it is and talk a little bit about how the company came together. But, you know, what does ARK do?
So ARK is a fintech platform, B2B fintech platform that uses technology to provide non-dilutive capital to premium high growth startups. That's where we're starting. And so our mission is broadly to help startups grow. And the wedge into that is, you know, providing funding. But I think, you know, taking a step back, what we're interested in doing is partnering with founders and, you know, startup teams to really provide a more, you know, consumer-like, streamlined way to think about managing cash, managing finance, financial decisions in their business. And funding, I think, is a really interesting starting point there, because by providing, you know, not small dollars through technology in a way that's, you know, transactional or overly automated, but you know, making the process streamlined, providing a financial product that's founder friendly, we're able to kind of enter the headspace of a founder in a really strategic level. If the experience is, you know, better than the status quo and is not painful, then a founder can, you know, would likely want to come back and actually engage more than if it were a fully kind of people-driven process. So that's kind of the high level. And then just to directly answer your question, the financial product we provide, it's a revenue-based financing product. And so what we're doing to really distill it down is advancing customers' capital today based on their future revenue streams. So if a company is growing, they'll onboard with us, we'll get access to their financial stack essentially, and look at the trend line of the revenue and say, you know, call it over the next 12 months, a business is growing, and we'll advance a portion of that next 12 months revenue and allow them to access it today. There's no dilution. The pricing is really just a discount that we apply when we advance the customer capital. And what it allows is the company to access a material amount of money today, invested in growth spend, so hires, you know, ad spend, whatever high ROI activity the company is looking to do today, and ideally, you know, accelerate growth over that next 12-month period. the nuance with the technology product is we've created a platform where customers can access this revenue-based financing in 48 hours, which is a material change from the weeks to months it takes to raise, you know, traditional forms of equity or debt capital. And I think what this allows is our customers to think about financing on a weekly or monthly basis, just in time, you know, the amount that they actually need to drive growth in their business today versus, you know, thinking about raising a block of capital that they have to grow into over 12 to 24 months.
To draw the analogy, it's you or the robot version, the algorithm version of the company ingests a whole bunch of data about the financials of another company, and based on that creates, you know, some sort of underwriting rule set, in particular based on revenue. And you're using, I guess, the revenue trend to underwrite this company to take out a loan and then reinvest that loan into the growth to make the company grow. Is that correct?
That's the general idea. I'd say the one nuance is our product is technically not a loan. It's a more founder-friendly financial product, which is a cash advance. And the nuance is we don't actually have full recourse because the customer doesn't owe us money, all else equal, from a kind of a legal standpoint. What we're doing is we're buying a future stream of revenue at a discount. And so we're really betting on the customer's growth, because if the customer, you know, turned off revenue, we would have bought a stream of revenue that never materialized. And if it were debt, that would be, you know, a default of the credit agreement. But in our agreement, that falls on our underwriting capabilities.
How close or far is that to invoice financing?
The broad bucket is receivables financing. And then there's two kind of categories within it. There's invoice financing or invoice factoring. And then there's more of like the cash advance product, which is what we're offering. The main difference is invoice factoring, you're actually underwriting and purchasing individual kind of inked receivable invoices. That's not what we're doing. We're actually underwriting the total company. We're looking at their contracts, but we decided to go with this total company underwriting approach because it's more founder-friendly and less operationally burdensome on the customer.
I'd love to learn more about how you said you plug into their financial stack. So I'd love to learn more about that piping. Like, how does the data aggregation work? What are the things that you prioritize and plug in into your underwriting model? What's good, what's bad? How does the decision get made by the algorithm or by a human being? Like, how does that work?
So I'll start with the experience from the customer perspective. We have an online Arc app where a customer self-serve onboards. They connect mainly three pieces of their financial stack. They connect their bank accounts, they connect their accounting system, and if they're a software or a SaaS company, they connect their billing and subscription provider through APIs, and then they hit submit. And that's the onboarding flow. Typically, it takes less than 5 minutes. The information that they connected, there's a few different parts before we reach a financing decision. This is automated, these steps. The financial information, the data is cleaned using some ML-enriched data labeling. It's mainly the transaction detail from the banking connection. So we basically try to build, you know, a P&L, you know, an income statement view of what the different cash flows are. That information, along with the, you know, call it QuickBooks data or whatever accounting system they use, you know, the Stripe billing data, ChargeBee, Recurly, et cetera, that all comes together in our underwriting model. And this model is really a collection of dozens of metrics that we think help us price the risk of the credit. I'd bucket them into two main categories. We're doing revenue-based financing, and so having a really clear view of revenue is important. I mean, there's a bunch of metrics that are important for us to understand for each company. So some of it is, you know, just to name some of the high-level ones, it's revenue scale. So how big is revenue? What's the trend line? So growth, what's the, you know, volatility month over month? That helps us, you know, understand kind of the receivable that we're purchasing. And then the other set of metrics are financial position related. So, you know, amount of cash, runway, you know, different cuts of runway, And that's less about the receivable that we're purchasing, but more about the credit of the customer. We built this model, we've automated it. And so there's an automated, the calculations are automated on our back end. We also have more of an Excel-based model for comparison purposes and an underwriting team in-house that can validate and make sure that the two are married up as we've scaled. The different metrics, they're weighted based on importance and drive, you know, an output, which is an ARC score, which is a 0 to 100 score, really a risk rating or a credit rating for one of our customers. And this score correlates to the terms of our offer. So the amount of revenue we're willing to advance, the discount rate for that we, you know, kind of charge when we pull forward the future revenue, and the repayment term. There's a kind of a raw score, but then there's also the qualitative overlay that our credit team and credit committee can apply to capture some of the factors that are more, you know, suited for notching on the qualitative side versus, you know, capturing through a metric. That's how the full process works. Happy to dig into specifics if you have more questions.
Yeah, one of the things that kind of sticking out at me is the word startup, helping startups grow. And the reason it's sticking out at me is because Brex just recently announced that they are firing tens of thousands of small business customers and keeping only the startup customers, because the, you know, SMB profile from a corporate card perspective isn't the same as the startup profile. And so I'm guessing there's some underlying truth about, you know, underwriting small businesses in the current market versus really focusing on like startups that are capitalized for hypergrowth and so on. And I think that's a very purposeful distinction, you know, using the word startup versus using the word company or small business or enterprise. How do you think about that distinction? And then why is the focus on kind of growth and startups rather than the meat and potatoes, you know, small and medium-sized business out there?
The Brex news is hot off the press, and I'm not as familiar with, you know, kind of the decision-making there. Probably has to do with, you know, growing very fast and backtracking a bit on where they want to focus. We're at a different stage, and I'd say that our philosophy is we want to have a vertical focus with our product. And we've been very intentional about serving software / SaaS businesses that are at the earliest stage. And so in software and SaaS, that's more of a business model, more so than, you know, startup versus SMB. But, and so I'd say like relative to the Brex situation, we've been very intentional about focusing on a specific subset of customers and building our product around it from day one. And so while our underwriting model, which is revenue based, we have the ability to serve any company that has line of sight into their future revenue. And so we can serve non-software startups that are more brick and mortar, et cetera. We've moved against that because we think, and we haven't gotten into kind of the longer term vision, but we think developing a product catered towards a specific vertical, as we think about, you know, adding new products, adding software, you know, leveraging the kind of data and learnings that we're gathering today, and really building a community around a certain group of companies, there's a lot of value in that. And so I think we'll stick with this segment of companies. By the way, you know, the SaaS market is a $400 billion market growing, you know, 20% year over year. And so it's a big market, but it is a specific vertical that we're gonna stay focused on.
How do you think about competition in the space? You know, Pipe comes to mind in terms of targeting SaaS and enterprise companies that want to grow. What are the vectors of competition in the space?
Most of the market for a tech-enabled, revenue-based financing product focused on software startups, most of the market is white space. And what I mean by that is the typical, you know, the average founder, especially a first-time founder, when they're building their business, they look to venture capital. And then at some point, if they want to raise venture debt, they'll speak to one of the offline, you know, legacy kind of venture debt providers, banks. And so that's the majority of the customers that we speak to today. And I think that there, you know, especially venture capital, I think that there's we don't see ourselves as necessarily, you know, competitive or displacing, you know, venture capital dollar for dollar. We're a new financing tool in the toolkit for startups. And the more awareness and interest and understanding of this, you know, tech-enabled and more founder-friendly alternative, the better. That's my view. So if you kind of double-click and say, okay, there's these offline providers, we're developing something that's a little bit different. There's a more frequent use case. It's, you know, faster, less painful to get financing. It's moving in the right direction. And then how do we differentiate, you know, amongst tech-enabled financing providers? One of them is our focus on software businesses at the earliest stage. I think with other players in the market, there's been a tendency to move in other directions, whether it's small businesses, other types of revenue-based products, even outside of the startup ecosystem. What we want to do is not create a very transactional exchange for revenue. We're focused on a very hands-on, you know, total company underwrite. So that deviates from the receivables factoring and establishing the relationship similar to the type of, you know, high level, you know, partnership that a venture capital firm might have. And the focus on the earliest stage company is important because this is where, you know, companies are most vulnerable. A dollar of dilution is the most impactful given the valuation is the lowest. And so we want to build relationships that are deep, strategic, help companies at the smallest scale, grow with them, add more financial products, and help them, you know, not just with funding, but also managing cash within their business. And there may be others, you know, entering the market, but I think similar to, you know, the fact that there's multiple, you know, venture debt providers or multiple equity providers, I think it's the first at bat or the first inning in this market. And we get excited when customers come to us saying they're really into this space. They understand the value we provide. And then it's up to us to develop, you know, the best relationship with them and be able to serve them.
Yeah, I think this is one of the spaces that can be growing very quickly horizontally in the sense that it can expand and accommodate lots and lots of players. I think it's an open question if there are returns to scale for capital in this way, other than perhaps the quality of the underwriting algorithm. And the more you underwrite, the higher quality, theoretically, your underwriting becomes, especially if you make it through a couple of different cycles. So the next question I've got for you is more around, you know, the asset class itself. Your company is quite young, so you haven't had to have the on-deck experience yet. I'm sure you're aware and paying a lot of attention to risk management and to not get blown out by, you know, startups not being able to generate the types of things that they want to generate, especially if the input into kind of forward projection is prior performance and cash on hand. So how do you think about the current macro environment as it relates to revenue-based financing? How do you think about the credit risk? And again, I understand it's not a bond, but it is a credit risk in a sense. How do you think about these elements for, you know, the sector that you're trying to cover today? What are some of the ways that ARK is building around the challenge of the current environment?
It's a great question, and it's very top of mind. I'll unpack it with a couple of observations. The first one is, you know, if anyone's, you know, paying attention to the market, obviously it's been a tough time for the public market valuations. It's kind of trickled down into, you know, the venture capital later stage and potentially earlier stage side on the venture capital, you know, dollars deployed to startups, also downward pressure on valuations. This has created a tailwind for our business in the sense that, you know, startups that once could bank on the fact that, you know, Series A or Series B would get done at a, you know, an attractive valuation are now starting to think through what are the other alternatives for capital raising, which I think is healthy. And so more businesses have been coming to speak with us. So demand has increased. To your point, I think it's a good thing as long as we can stay disciplined in our underwriting. You know, one comment about ARK relative to, I think, some of the tech-enabled financing providers that have been around for longer is some of them are more focused on small businesses and higher frequency, higher cost financing. we've always been very focused on funding premium growth startups, you know, larger dollar amounts, so smaller, lower frequency, higher dollar amounts.
What's an average check size?
There's a range, obviously, given there's a big jump in revenue from a seed stage company to a, you know, series B or C company, but think in the, you know, low hundreds of thousands to, you know, multi-million. So in that range versus in the, you know, sub 50K size, which I know some of that's the sweet spot for some of the other higher frequency financing providers or kind of in the low hundreds only. And so I guess the point I'm trying to make here is we've been fortunate that even in the early days, you know, early days for us, 6+ months ago, we only focused on high quality businesses that were growing. And so as more businesses come to us seeking capital, I think that there will definitely be more high quality businesses that we're choosing to fund, but we're not lowering or changing our underwriting model. And so from an underwriting perspective, we have, you know, sharpened our pencil and, you know, we have a full in-house team that has done revenue-based, some of the team members have done revenue-based financing for years, been involved in fintech credit cycles. And so I think we can stay disciplined. There'll be more awareness of our product over the coming months. We'll be able to, as you noted earlier, you know, the more companies that onboard, the more companies that we fund, the longer we're around, the more we're honing our underwriting model. And so I think this will be, you know, a really interesting set of months where hopefully we can provide an outlet for a lot of, you know, strong businesses that have the right to, you know, survive and be around the next 6 to 12 months during the reversion to, you know, a normalized valuation environment. And then coming out of that, we'll be able to just, you know, turn on the funding even more for these businesses and continue the relationship.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a lot of very funky revenue trends over the next couple of months, probably with a lot higher volatility and in the wrong direction. You know, switching tracks a little bit out of the financial element, from a technology perspective, in every single industry or vertical for finance, whether it's digital investing or lending or neobanks or capital markets architecture, whatever, there's often a blocker for real automation in the underlying systems. Like, it's really hard to plug into banks and get good data. And maybe even if you get data, you can't get money movement, right? You need some sort of third-party embedded finance thing. Can you talk a bit about what are some of the technical challenges that you'd love for them to go away? Like, you'd love for maybe some part of the technology build to have been better, or like, what's missing in terms of fintech infrastructure in the space that you're running your business in?
You're spot on with, you know, the point that what unlocks what we're doing, which is faster underwriting, higher quality underwriting than, you know, the non, you know, kind of the legacy offline financing providers is the technology. We rely on banking connections, accounting connections, billing and subscription, processing this information, making faster decisions. And we're very focused on building out our engineering team, and they work hand in hand with our underwriting team in order to keep this going. You know, I wasn't part of the fintech industry, you know, 10 years ago, but my observation is a lot of the infrastructure startups, you know, banking as a service, you know, different API, you know, players, all of this has unlocked the ability to do what we're doing. And I think, you know, it's increasingly, there's increasing, you know, strength in this area. But to answer your question directly, the number one thing that we focus on from an underwriting standpoint is quality of data access. And so staleness in banking connections, the ability to ingest transaction data in a standardized way and clean kind of the labeling, all of that I think is very important. And we've invested a lot of time in building out the right API connections. There's a lot of kind of engineering resources you can put behind it, but I think some of it comes down to, you know, different infrastructure players like the Plaids of the world, et cetera. And so that's something where I think if I could wake up tomorrow and we'd have perfect access to any customer bank account, integrating, staying connected in perpetuity, and having the ability to see a clean set of data in a structured way, I think that would that would even make our, you know, underwriting and decision making stronger, and we could deploy, you know, our engineering resources in other places, new products, things like that.
Do you feel like the retail version of kind of this is better defined and there's just more solutions around it? You know, like when I think about Plaid or other data aggregation layers, it makes me think of retail financial planning or budgeting, you know, or like logging into, you know, Venmo or your payments app or your trading app and kind of authenticating to a particular bank account number versus like really pulling business level data and then architecting a P&L out of it. You know, is it the same providers? Is it a different set of providers? Like, do you feel like one part of the industry is ahead of the other?
From a data infrastructure standpoint, it's difficult for me to comment on that. I'd say like kind of the other half of the things that I think about, there's kind of like our back end underwriting and data processing, et cetera. And then there's the kind of obviously the front end customer experience, the, you know, the consumerized aspect. I think like the B2C, the consumer side has been ahead, obviously, on the customer, you know, facing experience. And that's been moving more, you know, to the enterprise B2B side. So that could be some of it, where, you know, it looks and feels better on the consumer side, and maybe it's a simpler underwrite than on the B2B side, where there's more complexity. But I don't know if I have a strong view on this specific kind of data aggregation question.
Gotcha. No worries. Cool. Well, thank you so much for telling the story of the company and sharing more about the sector. I think it's a fascinating conversation. If our audience wants to learn more about you or about Arc, where should they go?
They can check out arc.tech. My information's there. There's information about our platform. You can onboard. You can drop us a note. Everything should be there.
Awesome, Nick. Thank you so much for joining the podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Hi, everyone. That's it for this week's episode of the FinTech Blueprint. For more technical deep dives into all things fintech and decentralized finance, check out fintechblueprint.com and grab a free subscription to the newsletter. This is Lex, and I'll see you next time.